Well, the NFC West just got a whole lot more interesting with the big news of J.J. Watt going to Arizona. That being kind of the big news of the day, it feels like. At least this morning, it feels like that was kind of a big topic, was that J.J. Watt, after asking for his release from Houston, was granted that release. And now, after there was a report late last week of, you know, about 12 teams that had offers out to J.J. Watt, Arizona able to gobble him up, and I think it's a smart move from both sides, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But that the big news, it seemed like, at least out of the world of the NFL today, was J.J. Watt going to Arizona. So we will talk about that a little later on in the show. But also coming up today, we'll talk some NHL and NBA from the weekend, some interesting scores and some fun games there. Also, talk about the NASCAR race that happened yesterday down in Miami. And third different winner, and maybe a winner that, again, wasn't as much of a surprise since he had a win under his belt already. But still, the first three winners of the season so far, definitely shaping up to show us, or showing us, that it's going to be a different NASCAR season this year. I mean, none of the big names have gotten a win yet this year, and that I think it's a little surprising to me. So it's been a fun season so far, so we'll talk about that race coming up. But first, let's start with some local news. The Nevada Wolfpack Sports were in full-fledged action this weekend. We had baseball, softball, we had men's basketball, we had men's tennis, women's golf is going on today, women's track and field, women's volleyball. There was a ton going on this weekend in terms of Nevada sports. Let's start with baseball. The men had a three games against UNLV, their first Mountain West series, after going 3-1 in four games against Cal Poly. Unfortunately, didn't have the same kind of success against UNLV. Much like the series with Cal Poly, Nevada dropped the first game. Now, of course, the way that the Mountain West is doing conference games this year, conference series this year, it's a doubleheader on the first day, followed by a single game on the second day. Instead of having three games over 3 days, that's how they're going to manage the conference series this year, having the doubleheader the first day and having a single game on the second day. So the first game on Saturday, unfortunately, did not go Nevada's way, dropping a 3-2 game to UNLV. The Rebels got on the board early with two runs in the bottom of the first inning, then were able to hold that 2-0 lead all the way through eight innings before we got to the top of the ninth, and Nevada able to get on the board with two runs of their own. Anthony Flores flied out to center field for a sacrifice fly that allowed Dylan Strum to come in and score to make it 2-1. Then Wyatt Tilley hit an RBI single to right field, which allowed Bryce Tweet to come in and score to make it 2-2. So Nevada, again, coming back after being held off the scoreboard for the whole game, coming through in the top of the ninth inning, putting some pressure on UNLV. Unfortunately, though, the Rebels were able to get a run in the bottom of the ninth and walk off with a 3-2 victory there in the three runs on five hits with two errors for UNLV. In that one, Nevada had two runs on five hits with one error. And not a bad outing as well from Jake Jackson. Seven innings pitched, gave up eight hits, but only had two runs, both earned. But didn't walk anybody, struck out three. Sean Flowers came in with a very nice inning pitched himself. And then, unfortunately, Tyler Cochran, two-thirds of innings pitched, gave up that winning run for UNLV and took the loss in that one. But Nevada, a close contest there in that first game. Then, unfortunately, the second game, a little bit more of a lopsided victory there for UNLV, who once again, it wasn't the first inning, but the bottom of the second inning, UNLV came up with three runs there to take a 3-0 lead. However, Nevada, a lot quicker to respond in that second game of the doubleheader on Saturday, putting up two runs in the top of the third. So responding right away to UNLV's three runs in the bottom of the second. So it was 3-2 UNLV after three. Rebels were able to add one run in the bottom of the fifth to make it 4-2, and then put together three runs in the bottom of the seventh and one run in the bottom of the eighth to have an 8-2 lead. Nevada did get one run there in the top of the ninth, but still, UNLV a pretty comfortable win there in the second game, 8-3. Nevada had three runs on 14 hits. The three errors really did Nevada in this game, as UNLV had eight runs on 12 hits and no errors. So Nevada losing both games there on the Saturday doubleheader. But was able to come back and close out the series with a win. So they avoided the sweep to UNLV as Nevada in the single game on Sunday was able to get two runs in the top of the third, followed by a run in the top of the fourth. So a 3-0 lead for the Pack there. UNLV did have one run in the bottom of the sixth, but Nevada came back with two in the top of the eighth and one in the top of the ninth as well to make it 6-1 Nevada. And great showing there from the Pack. Again, to bounce back after those two games on Saturday, come back with a 6-run, 11-hit win. No errors in the game that on Sunday for Nevada, which helped. I think they had four combined in the two games on Saturday. But UNLV, one run on three hits and three errors for the Rebels in that game on Sunday, which definitely helped the Pack out to avoid the sweep. So Nevada baseball now 4-3 on the year, 1-2 in conference. Their next game comes tomorrow in the first of a home-and-home series or a home-and-away series against Arizona State. So Arizona State will host Nevada on Tuesday before the Sun Devils come to Reno all the way about middle of May. May 11th is when Arizona State will come to Reno. But Nevada gets to play the Arizona State Sun Devils tomorrow. That game will be on our sister station, 94.1 FM. First pitch scheduled for 12:05. Then men's basketball back in action this weekend after they had a game canceled against San Jose State and against Colorado State, then two games postponed, one against San Jose State, one against Colorado State. So getting back in action against Utah State Friday and yesterday, and unfortunately not going Nevada's way there on the road. It was a valiant effort there in the second half. Really, both games against Utah State, the men's basketball team had much better second halves than they did first halves. And the slow first half in the first game, I don't think is much of a surprise. A team coming off that kind of a layoff, it's going to hamper your rhythm and your chemistry in some way. Unfortunately, it hampered Nevada pretty heavily there in that first half, down 16. I think they were actually down 16 at the half in both games against Utah State. But the game on Friday, Nevada had a tremendously better second half against Utah State, came all the way back. I mean, they were down 16. They cut the lead, I think, to two points with 31 seconds left. And unfortunately, Utah State hitting a couple free throws late in the game helped seal the 75-72 victory for Utah State. But the way that game ended, really hoping that that would kind of spark Nevada. They'd kind of pick up where they left off at the end of that first game, starting the second game yesterday. But unfortunately, it was another slow start for the Nevada men's basketball team. Yesterday, they were trailing 39-23 at the half. And again, still, Nevada had a better second half in that game than they did on the first half. Again, just like Friday. But unfortunately, this time, not able to close that gap. I think the closest they got was 11 points in that second half. So definitely a little more of a rougher game there the second time around as Utah State got the 87-66 win over Nevada. In that second game on Sunday, Nevada had a fair amount of players in double digits. He had Desmond Cambridge leading the way with 13 points, and he had Trey Coleman and Warren Washington each with 12 points. Kane Millings added 11 off the bench, and then Daniel Foster had 10 points in that game. Grant Sherfield held to just 6 points in the second game against Utah State. The nice thing is, though, is that when Grant Sherfield has had a low-scoring game, I mean, he had 11 points in the first game against Utah State, but when he's been held to single digits this year, I think this is only the third time that he's been held to single digits this year, he's usually come back with quite a performance after that game. So the fact that he was held to 6 points in that second game against Utah State, Nevada has one game left in the regular season. They will host Colorado State this Friday, and I wouldn't be surprised if Grant Sherfield went out there and went off the way that he's responded after having low-scoring games this year. But for Nevada, I mean, that's a tough road trip to have this late in the season against Utah State, a team, again, that is you know, one of the conference, true conference contenders right there with Nevada as well, obviously. But Utah State, a tough team to beat on the road, and unfortunately Nevada unable to get that done. But they do have one game left on the schedule here at home against Colorado State, so they can end 15-9 on the year if they get that win. They're now 9-7 in conference. They could end 10-7 in conference and get a win to end off the regular season. I mean, they're 9-2 at home. This is a team that has performed very well on their home floor, so I think they can come back and have a nice bounce back game there against Colorado State to end off their regular season. For the Mountain West tournament gets started March 10th, a week from this Wednesday. So we'll see if Nevada can get some rhythm, get some chemistry, and get some win under their belt against Colorado State and prepare themselves, set themselves up nicely for a Mountain West tournament. That's going to be tough to, you know, another tough run through the tournament field there in the conference. But you know what? The way Nevada has played at home and on neutral sites, they are still not a team to sleep on in any sense. So hopefully they can get a win here against Colorado State at home. And the final men's sport that was in action this weekend was men's tennis. Nevada was in Fresno, California for the Fresno State Invitational. They did get swept by Fresno State in their first matchup on Saturday, 4-0. However, they came back later that day and beat Azusa Pacific 4-0. So Nevada started the day getting swept. They end the day sweeping their opponents. So a nice bounce back performance there from the Nevada men's tennis team, who will be back in action, I believe, a week from this Friday, although those opponents are still to be announced. So if that is not the case, they'll be back in action March 18th here at home against Idaho. But those were the men's sports in actions this weekend. The women that were in action, really, women's golf is in action today. They're down in Sacramento for the Gunrock Invitational. And let's see if they have the score up here for the women's golf meet. They will have another day of competition tomorrow. And it is not up there right now. But they'll have another day of competition tomorrow with the Nevada women's golf team to wrap up this Gunrock Invitational. And then next week, in 2 weeks' time, they'll be up in St. George, Utah for the BYU invite. But Nevada right now, women's golf in Sacramento for the Gunrock Invitational today and tomorrow. So we'll let you know how they did on tomorrow's show. But also in action this past weekend was women's softball. They were in Stockton, California for the Libby Mattson Classic. And for Nevada, they, again, 2-2 for the tournament. They were swept by Idaho State. They lost. They had a doubleheader on Friday and Saturday. The first game on Friday was against Idaho State. They lost 7-0 with Idaho State getting on the board with two runs in the first, then adding a run in the bottom of the fourth. The big inning came with three runs in the bottom of the fifth for Idaho State before adding one more in the bottom of the sixth for the 7-0 win over Nevada. But the Wolfpack would bounce back later on Friday, get the win over Pacific 4-0 after getting a run in the top of the first and three runs in the top of the third. Some great pitching and great defense for Nevada helped them get a shutout later that day 4-0. Then came back on Saturday, played the same two teams again. Unfortunately for Nevada, once again losing to Idaho State, this time by a score of 12-6, as Nevada did get a run on the board in the bottom of the first, but Idaho State added three runs in the top of the second and four in the top of the third to take a 7-1 lead. However, Nevada did respond nicely in the bottom of the third with three runs of their own to make it a 7-4 game, then cut it to 7-5 with a run in the bottom of the fourth, but Idaho State able to add one run in the top of the fifth and then four in the top of the sixth. Nevada would add one more run there in the bottom of the sixth to make it 12-6, a final. So a little more competitive there in terms of just getting runs on the board in the first game against Idaho State. But Nevada, unfortunately, losing both to that team in Idaho State. But just like Friday, after losing the first game to Idaho State, they came back to win against Pacific. They did the same thing on Saturday after the 12-6 loss, came back and beat Pacific 8-4 in eight innings. So both teams getting one run in the second inning to make it obviously a 1-1 game. Nevada and then got a run in the top of the third to make it 2-1 before Pacific tied it up in the bottom of the fourth. We go to the eighth inning, which is the first inning of extras in softball, and Nevada getting six runs in the top of the eighth, taking 8-2 lead. Pacific did manage to put two runs of their own in the bottom of the eighth, but Nevada held on for the 8-4 win there in eight innings. So a 2-2 weekend there in Stockton, California, has the softball team now at 9-5 on the year. And hopefully they can build off that final loss against Pacific. They will be in Palo Alto, California this Friday, taking on Stanford. which is actually part of a Stanford Invitational Tournament down there. And then they'll have games against BYU and Stanford again on Saturday, then California on Sunday. So a big weekend coming up for the Nevada softball team. Then some quick shout-outs to the women's track and field team for Nevada, their first outdoor meet of the season. They're in Sacramento, the Sacramento State Tri-Meet, and Nevada came away victorious. First in the first out of the three teams competing, Nevada won the meet with 121 points. Sacramento State was behind them with 108, and UC Davis finished third with 89 points. So a really strong showing, a lot of great freshmen out there contributing for the Nevada women track and field team this past weekend. So a great job there to Nevada getting first place there in the Sacramento State Tri-Meet. Then women's volleyball on the road against San Diego State, and they sweep the Aztecs. Beat them 3-1 on Friday. They dropped the first set 25-20, but then came back and won three straight, 25-14, 25-20, and 25-15 to get the win there. Then came back on Saturday and swept the Aztecs 3-0, winning 21, 25, 22, and 25-13. So a really strong showing there from the volleyball team on the road against San Diego State. They are now 3-5 on the year, 3-5 in conference. But they have they've looked a lot better as of late than they did at the start of the year. So this volleyball team could be get into a good rhythm. Hopefully they can keep that up as they go on the road against San Jose State this weekend. But that's some of the action from Nevada sports that happened over the weekend. Of course, women's golf happening today and tomorrow. We'll keep you updated on that. But just great to see all that Nevada sports and Nevada athletics back out there and taking part in competing again and winning. A lot of success from these Nevada sports. So looking forward to the rest of those competitions and the rest of those seasons to unfold in front of us. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some NHL and NBA from over the weekend. That coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, it was an entertaining weekend in both the NBA and the NHL with some interesting results and, of course, some headlines as well. I mean, some breaking news out of Atlanta. The Hawks have announced they have fired head coach Lloyd Pierce 34 games into his third season with the team. After starting 10-9 this year, the team has lost 11 of their last 15 games. So the Atlanta Hawks will be either announcing an interim head coach, which I imagine they'd most likely do since we're in the middle of the season, or I guess they could announce a new coach. But I would imagine they're going to come out with an interim coach here. They may have already announced that. I didn't see that announced as part of the firing of Lloyd Pierce, but usually when a team loses a coach or fires a coach in the middle of the season, they usually just go for an interim head coach instead of hiring somebody else. So we'll see what the Hawks do there, but Lloyd Pierce out of Atlanta, and one of just, you know, few storylines from this weekend. But if we go back to Friday, a game that stands out, Miami beats Utah. The Heat been playing some better basketball as of late, and Jimmy Butler and Goran Dragic Friday night able to get Miami past arguably the best team in the NBA right now, the Utah Jazz. And they did that, of course, Butler contributing 33 points. He was the leading scorer for Miami. They had three other starters in double digits. Bam Adebayo had 19 points, Duncan Robinson with 15, and Kendrick Nunn with 12. Then you had Goran Dragic off the bench with 26 points in 33 minutes. Just four players off the bench for Miami in this game. But Goran Dragic with a huge contribution there with 26 points. And not that Utah necessarily had a bad game. I mean, Donovan Mitchell still had 30 points. Rudy Gobert had a double-double with 15 points and 12 rebounds. You know, Utah had six players in double digits, so it wasn't like Utah was having this awful night. Miami just came out with some great defense late. And again, Butler and Dragic just being the duo that they are when they're on. I mean, Butler, of course, has just continued to prove people wrong, saying that he can't be a star player, can't lead a team, can't be that captain. And, you know, he was able to do that last year with Miami, and they've had some success this year, and they've been playing some solid basketball as of late. So Friday, I thought that was a huge result for Miami to get the 124-116 win over Utah. And then also on Friday, the Lakers were able to end their losing streak. They beat the Trailblazers 102-93, which finally got them back in the win column. LeBron James, 28 points. Dennis Schroeder had 22 as well in his return to the Laker lineup. And like I said, able to end that four-game losing streak, which, again, I don't think needed to be alarming to anybody. I mean, the Lakers, again, we thought they would struggle a little bit without Anthony Davis out there, and that was the case. They were definitely struggling. But you know, this is still a team led by LeBron James, still a team with some great talent on there. And so why they slipped a little bit, I didn't think this was going to be a slip that would take them out of the playoffs or out of the top four. I'm not going to say it's good to see the Lakers win. I'm not a Laker fan. Being a Suns fan, I kind of didn't mind them being on a losing streak. But if you are a Lakers fan, the fact they're on a two-game winning streak now, they're back up into second place in the Western Conference, you know, they're going to feel better if and when, or not if, but they're going to feel better when they get Anthony Davis back, whatever that might be. For now, back up in second, back into winning ways, probably feels a little bit better for those Laker fans. Then on Saturday, again, some interesting, I mean, the Jazz getting back into winning ways, bouncing back from the loss to Miami, beating the Magic 124-109. Then in the primetime game, the Mavericks and the Nets, Dallas coming away with a 115-98 victory as the Mavs end that eight-game run that the Nets had as Porzingis returned to the lineup. Kyrie Irving sat in the game, which made a big difference there, and just in the way that Brooklyn operates, even without KD, with Harden and Irving out there, they're still having some success. But I just don't feel like with two of those three stars out, this Brooklyn team is going to struggle. And they do. Without KD, without Kyrie, this Brooklyn team definitely struggled. I mean, James Harden led the way with 29 points, as you would imagine he would, as the only one of those that big three that was out there on the floor. But Porzingis added 18 points in his return. Doncic, of course, led the way with 27 points and just some great contributions as well. Tim Hardaway off the bench with 13 points as well. And Dallas just played a solid game on the road against Brooklyn. Again, a little undermanned without Kyrie Irving and KD out there on the floor. But still, Dallas, even with the way they've played this year, could have very easily, maybe not easily, but could have very well lost to an undermanned Brooklyn team. And so they went out there and took care of business and got the win. Porzingis back in the lineup, I think, definitely helps. But that still could have been a game that Dallas would have lost. And I don't think too many people would have been overly shocked by that. But Dallas able to get the win. They're on the road against Brooklyn on Saturday. Then yesterday, the Bucks beating the Clippers 105-100 after Giannis had a huge fourth quarter to help propel Milwaukee over the Clips in that matchup. And then again, the Heat staying hot, beat the Hawks 109-99 at home. And, Miami right now, back up into fifth place in the Eastern Conference. They've won six games in a row, 7-3 in their last 10, a team that is really starting to play some good basketball. I think this is the kind of Heat team that we thought we would see after the way their season ended. Of course, some injuries and stuff early on in the season, but still, I think this is the kind of Miami Heat team we expected. Maybe not one that's back up in that top four and contending for the top seed in the Eastern Conference, but at least a playoff-bound team. Now they're back in a playoff position. Still a long way to go, I understand, but this is, I think, more of the Miami Heat team that we thought we would see after the way last year, at least I thought we would see after the way last year ended, with them making that huge run to the NBA Finals and seeming like that was kind of the coming out party for a lot of those young guys. And, you know, that maybe put some pressure on them that they weren't able to handle early on in the year. And who knows if they've been able to adjust with that, a little bit healthier now, and just able to play some solid basketball as of late. And then a game, maybe of the game of the weekend, possibly, Hornets at Kings. Charlotte capped an incredible comeback over Sacramento to win 127-126 coming down the stretch of this game. And it was just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, the fact that, again, you had essentially Malik Monk converting a three-point play with 1.4 seconds left on the clock to cap this comeback from Charlotte. And it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I mean, I didn't get to watch the full game, but I got to see the highlights. And just incredible with the way that Charlotte kept just inching back into it, cutting into Sacramento's lead one possession at a time, and did a great job of just being able to hold Sacramento kind of hold them down there in the home stretch of that game as Charlotte continued this comeback and put on a heck of a show in Sacramento. And you had 42 points there from P.J. Washington for Charlotte, who led the way. Nearly a double-double, had 9 rebounds on the day, but 42 points there from P.J. Washington. And then, you know what, LaMelo Ball, again, a nice performance from him with 24 points as well. The only two starters in double digits, as Malik Monk had 21 points off the bench. And then Miles Bridges had 13 points off the bench as well for Charlotte. But a great game there from the Hornets, who are holding their own in the Eastern Conference. They've taken over that 8th place spot in the East. So don't overlook Charlotte if you were, or if you know, if you were like me and you're kind of just over the all the LaMelo Ball hypes, you're kind of trying to ignore the team. They're making it hard to ignore them now as they keep playing some solid basketball. 16-17 on the year, not the best record obviously, but a team that I'm not sure if many people saw them as being a possible playoff contender, and now they're right around that eighth seed area. They're currently the eighth seed. So Charlotte playing some solid basketball right now. We'll see where that goes. But also, if you're a Warriors fan, I mean, obviously some tough news with Draymond Green exiting the game yesterday with a left ankle sprain. So, I mean, Golden State with the injury issues they've had to big names. I mean, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, what those two guys mean to that lineup, and to not have Klay Thompson this whole year, and now to have Draymond Green again, are probably, you know, back and forth about whether or not he's going to be in the lineup, for how long he might be out, you know, not making it any easier for Golden State this year. But we'll wait and see how that plays out. But a fun weekend there in the NBA. Also a fun weekend in the NHL. Some scoring streaks or some win streaks coming to an end. We go back to Friday. We had the Wild and the Kings. The Kings trying to keep that winning streak going, but Minnesota at home ended it on Friday. The Wild got the 3-1 win over the Kings. And one of the hottest teams in hockey for those six, seven game stretch suffered a loss and now, you know, falls down to fifth place there in the Western Division. But Minnesota, I mean, 12-6 this year now, 24 points. They're in second place in the Western Division, just 1 point back of Vegas. I mean, some of these teams like Minnesota, L.A., Arizona that were down towards the bottom of the standings, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th, I mean, you know, in that area here at the start of the year. Now Minnesota's in 2nd, L.A.'s in 5th, Arizona's still in 6th. But these are teams that looked like they were going to lose contact with divisional play early, and they've just surged back into playoff contention. But that was a fun game. On Friday, the Avalanche beat the Coyotes 3-2. Rangers got a big win over the Bruins 6-2. Go to Saturday, the Blues able to get back on winning track there, beat the Sharks 7-6 in an offensive showcase for both of those teams. Flames, Calgary getting a little bit of revenge over Ottawa after losing 2-1 the game before the game on Saturday. Calgary came back with a 6-3 victory over Ottawa to get them some precious points back in that Northern Division. Tampa Bay putting up a solid performance against Dallas. The Stars with that offense just kind of petering out, not knowing if it's going to show up, you know, which game, how much you're going to get. But Tampa Bay put a 5-0 beatdown on Dallas on Saturday. Maple Leafs got a big win on the road against Edmonton, 4-0. And then again, the Wild beat the Kings again in overtime on Saturday, 3. So Minnesota with LA's number here as of late. But then the Jets and Canadiens, another big matchup there in the Northern Division. Winnipeg coming away with a 2-1 win over Montreal. And then yesterday, history was made as Patrick Kane got his 400th career goal. It was his 11th of the season. It came in the Chicago-Detroit game yesterday. In the third period, just about halfway through the third period, Patrick Kane scored, gave Chicago at the time a 5-1 win. Blackhawks would go on to win that game 7-2. But Patrick Kane recording his 400th goal in his NHL career in that game against Detroit. So some history made over the weekend, some fun games as well from the NHL, and some fun games coming up today. I mean, if we want to go back to the NBA real quick, some interesting games going on today in the association. We're going to have, obviously, Nets and Spurs. Spurs coming back from a long time off. We'll see if they can manage anything against Brooklyn and what will the Nets look like tonight. So we'll see if they can get a win there on the road against San Antonio. Utah back in action on the road against New Orleans. So we'll see that. We'll see if the Hornets can keep up their good play on the road against Portland. So definitely some intrigue there in the world of the NBA. Then also in the world of the NHL, some interesting games going on. I mean, Calgary at Ottawa again there in the Northern Division. The teams play the last of a three-game set in Ottawa after the Flames. Again, even that series with a 6-3 win on Saturday, these two teams. Ottawa, I mean, just by themselves has been playing so much better hockey as of late. They've been a lot more fun to watch, a lot more intriguing to watch. And the fact they're splitting series with teams like Calgary, they're competing against teams like Montreal, not the cream of the crop of this division this year, but teams are going to have to get by if they somehow want to miraculously challenge for a playoff spot this year in the North. And that's not as crazy to think of now as it was maybe a couple weeks ago, because Ottawa, who was way back in the Northern Division, is now kind of right on the doorstep of getting out of eighth place. And that's saying something with the way this Ottawa team was really struggling. But they're now just 3 points back of Vancouver to get out of last place, and then 7 points back of Calgary to get into fifth. And Montreal is right there with 23, which is just 8 points ahead of Ottawa. So all of a sudden, those bottom four spots in the North are a whole heck of a lot closer than they were a few weeks ago. And it'll be interesting to see if Ottawa can rally after their loss to Calgary the same way the Flames did and possibly get another big 2 points under their belt and make the bottom of that division a little more intriguing. Then staying in the Northern Division, we have Vancouver at Winnipeg. The Canucks lost 4 in a row. 3 in regulation, 1 in overtime, and are 2-9-2 in their past 13 games. So again, a team that, I don't think people expected to be the top of the Northern Division, but after the year they had last year, I was expecting Vancouver to be a little bit more of a playoff contender in this division, and they have struggled this season. That youth just not having the same kind of success they did last year, and of course, as teams start to get more film on a lot of those young players, they start to learn how to defend them, you know, tougher and make it harder for them there on the ice, and that's happening, I think, to Vancouver this year. And it's been tough for them to really respond to that and really answer to that call. And they've suffered in the standings, being in sixth place right now. And again, if they keep losing and Ottawa keeps winning, they'll find themselves in last place there in that division. So we'll see if Vancouver can turn it around tonight against Winnipeg. And again, since we're talking about the Northern Division, Toronto at Edmonton. Forward William Nylander has scored 3 goals and 5 points in 5 games for the Maple Leafs against the Oilers, and Toronto does lead the season series 3-1-1 this year. So 3 wins against Edmonton with 1 loss in regulation and 1 loss in overtime. So Toronto, I mean, really, Toronto's gotten the better of a lot of teams there in the Northern Division, being first place in the North. But Edmonton, obviously, a lot of firepower on their own with Draisaitl and McDavid and the whole lineup of offensive firepower they have. So we'll see if Edmonton can turn their luck around against Toronto this year tonight. But a lot of action going on in that Northern Division. So we'll see how that plays out. But that was some of the action from the NHL and NBA over the weekend. Looking forward to all that tonight. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little NASCAR from the race that happened yesterday down in Miami. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, NASCAR finally left Daytona after having the first 4 events of the season, the first 2 points paying events, then obviously the clash and the duels there at Daytona. They stayed in the state of Florida, but headed from Daytona to Miami for the oval, the mile-and-a-half oval that used to serve for as long as I really paid attention to NASCAR playoffs, used to serve as the final round of the playoffs. But now that obviously that honor goes to Phoenix, so Miami kind of finds its way. Just like last year, I think it was right up in the first part of the schedule, and it is this year as well. And a relatively fun race. I mean, the first stage, not a ton of action went on. I mean, the fact that Chris Buescher got to the stage victory was probably, the coolest thing about that first stage of the race. Chris Buescher, who had a great, a great first stage of this race, finding some good lines. I think it was Buescher who did a little bit of a slide job on Brad Keselowski and You know, again, those types of moments just kind of take your heart from your chest to your throat as you see those cars start to slide up the track. Two of them are closing on the one sliding up, and you just wonder, are they going to be able to stop? Are they going to be able to manage it? Or are they going to just smash into each other? But they are world-class drivers, and they did not do that. But Chris Buescher went on to win the first stage, followed by Brad Keselowski and Martin Truex Jr. William Byron and Alex Bowman rounded out the top 10 there in that first stage. Second stage, again, I mean, restarts, it felt like in stage two and the final stage, it felt like restarts, as I feel like they typically do, but that played a huge role, especially what was interesting about the race on Sunday is, again, I think we see in most Miami races, the race starts with the sun in the sky and then ends under the lights. And, man, that track just changes, you know, incredibly from daytime to nighttime, the way that just different cars are able to find speed. You know, the outer, you know, the top line there, the lineup close towards the wall during the daytime had literally felt like no traction. And guys that would run that high line just felt like it seemed like they were just falling back into the order. That sun goes down, that top line all of a sudden just got a ton of momentum on it. So fun to watch the race and the track change as the time changes and the sun goes down. So that's always a really intriguing part of it as well. But really, William Byron, who went on to win stage two in front of Denny Hamlin and Kurt Busch, went on to win the race as well. And like I said, that number 24 Chevrolet really improved the later on it got and the more that sun disappeared and less sunlight was on the track. That number 24 Chevy really had a coming to life almost. I mean, again, it seemed like I know it was a car that was close to just kind of falling out of contention, but there it comes, just comes alive as that sun goes down. And got a little bit of a break as well did William Byron with Tyler Reddick and Kyle Larson and Martin Truex Jr. all behind him trying to find out and fight amongst themselves as to who will be the best to challenge William Byron up front. And they never really got it figured out between them. William Byron had about a 2.5 second lead, took that into the finish. And again, a great drive there from William Byron. But Tyler Reddick as well. One of those cars that was just kind of falling back through the field. And then the last 60 lap, that last 60 lap green flag run, was just powering his way through the rest of that field there in Miami on Sunday. So a great drive there by William Byron. A great drive by Tyler Reddick, who finished behind Byron there in second. Martin Truex Jr. finished third. Kyle Larson fourth, and then Kevin Harvick rounded out the top five there in Miami. And now we're officially three races into the season. We have William Byron, we have Michael McDowell, and we have Christopher Bell as your three playoff drivers locked in already. Again, if you would have said that, you know, guys like Keselowski, guys like Truax Jr., guys like Kevin Harvick, guys like, you know, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, some of those guys that have been around forever that have won championships, if you were to tell me that we're going to get through the first three races of the season and none of those guys are going to have wins. I mean, Denny Hamlin goes right along with that too. Joey Logano, none of these guys have wins yet. I think that, you know, I think it's great for the sport of NASCAR to see new faces winning with some of these experienced faces still in there and still competing. I mean, again, Kevin Harvick finished fifth overall. If you look at the stage results again, Denny Hamlin, Kurt Busch up there towards the front, as is Kyle Larson, Joey Logano. So, I mean, it's not like these guys are way back in the field either. These guys just haven't had a ton of wins. Again, I think William Byron had one cup win before his win yesterday. So the three combined winners so far this year, before their wins, before each of their respective wins this year, had a combined one win between them. And now those three are already in the playoffs for this year. I mean, this is shaping up to be a really exciting season. Who knows how long we'll go before we get kind of our first big name, first major player, if you will, to get a win. And then, since we already have three spots taken up, How is that going to affect playoff standings as we get further into the season? I mean, the fact that this is the way the NASCAR season has started, I don't think we could have asked for anything better. I mean, if you're like me and you're a neutral fan, you don't really have – I mean, I like Chase Elliott. I wouldn't say that I'm really a diehard fan of his. But if you're like me and you're kind of a casual fan to NASCAR, you tune in for the races, you watch qualifying, it's fun to see three different drivers that I would bet you No one thought, at least all three of these guys, maybe William Byron gets a win at some point this year. If he doesn't win yesterday, maybe that's not as surprising. But I think most people in the world of NASCAR, in the world of auto racing, did not see these three men being your first three official winners this year. And that is fantastic for NASCAR and for auto racing. Again, if you're like me and you are more of a main Formula One fan, it's about as uniform as it gets with Hamilton and Mercedes dominating. So when you have IndyCar, when you have NASCAR, when you have Formula E that's giving you surprises like this, giving you winners, first-time winners, it is exhilarating as an auto racing fan. So happy that NASCAR is having this kind of a start to their season and can't wait to see where it goes as NASCAR finally leaves the state of Florida for this season. They will head to the West Coast. In fact, they're coming here. Well, not here to Reno, but they're coming to Nevada, Las Vegas, the next race on the calendar for NASCAR. So looking forward to that. And who knows who's going to win it? I mean, at this point, who really knows who's going to win that race? Again, I mean, you would think that one of the major names, I mean, at this point is in line to get the victory, but you just never know. And you know, looking forward to the uncertainty, the unpredictability of the NASCAR season this year. And just looking forward to what can happen in Vegas and what can happen down the line with what we've seen so far. And Miami overall, again, not the most, you know, exciting race or event-filled race, but the racing was still competitive. It was still fun. And again, to see Chris Boscher get a stage win, to see William Byron get his second Cup Series win, it's just been a really fun start to the season and can't wait to see where it goes for NASCAR this year. But like I said, they're coming to Vegas this weekend for the first race outside the state of Florida for this season. So we'll be excited to see how that goes and who comes away with the victory. Will we have finally a big name, a former champion? Will we finally have one of those drivers win a race this year? Or is it going to be another shock win in the world of NASCAR? I'm kind of hoping for the latter, but we'll have to wait and see. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the NFL news that was on everyone's mind this morning. J.J. Watt finds a brand new home in the desert. So we'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. The news out of the NFL today, mentioned it earlier on the show, mentioned it before we went to break. J.J. Watt has a new home in the desert. He signed a two-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. It was announced earlier today. Now, terms of this deal were not disclosed, but a source close to the team told Adam Schefter that the deal is worth $31 million and includes $23 million guaranteed. And really, I think this is great, a great fit for both parties. I think J.J. Watt gets to go to a team that, I know there was some, I don't know if I want to say there was, you know, pushback or there was some negative feedback or whatever, but a lot of people thought that J.J. Watt might go ring chasing leaving Houston. It might go to a team that has a little more of a chance to win a championship. However, though, I mean, you could argue that Arizona, yeah, they're a bit of a longer shot to win a championship, but the way Kyler Murray improved from year one to year two, if he makes another improvement going from year two to this year, which would be year three, with DeAndre Hopkins out there with some other, obviously, you know, the backfield that they were able to put together, this is a Arizona offense that has pop to it. You look at Chandler Jones on the defensive side of the ball for Arizona. That secondary, that is a very strong, very athletic, and very talented secondary for Arizona. You now put J.J. Watt into that defense, and if the offense can continue to produce and continue to do what they did last year, if J.J. Watt, even if he's not out there for, you know, if he's I don't know if he would take him necessarily a backup role, but let's say he's not out there for as much as maybe, you know, he was in the first part of his career. Maybe, you know, he wants to stay healthy, so he pulls back a little bit. Let's just imagine that. Even if he's out there for 40 or 50% of the snaps this year for Arizona, that's going to make a difference. And you pair him with Chandler Jones, that is going to be a frightening duo for any offensive line to try and stop. And yes, the question is, can he stay healthy? I think Arizona will be smart in managing that. But I think this is a great fit for J.J. Watt. He gets to go to a place that, again, a team that has had success. They've been a playoff contender, so he doesn't necessarily just go to a team that is going to be, you know, bottom of the conference or bottom of their division. So he gets to go to a team that can compete in the NFC West and did so. Look at Arizona's games against LA, against Seattle, against San Francisco. This is an Arizona team that is very, very game. in that division. So I think this helps. This is a good place for J.J. Watt to be, and it helps Arizona. Again, defensively, if he's only out there for 40, 50% of the snaps, that's going to make a difference. But also mentally, the mentality of that defense, I think, will definitely get a boost from J.J. Watt being there. Just the experience, the veteran leadership, that cannot be understated what that can do for a team. So I think his talent, with the talent that's already on that defense, is going to make Arizona a very difficult team to match up with and to compete with next year, and I'm really looking forward to that. And I would imagine that Russell Wilson is now pretty eager to get out of that division with the Cardinals, the Niners, and the Rams, with guys like Aaron Donald, Chandler Jones, Nick Bosa, J.J. Watt. Why would you want to go up against those guys six times a year? I don't think he would. I think Russell might be looking for a little way out of Seattle there. So we'll have to wait and see. I think that's a great, great fit for J.J. Watt. Great job for the Arizona Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins was pumped on Twitter saying life is good in Arizona. So really excited to see what they can do this year with J.J. Watt on that defense. And hopefully he stays healthy. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your Monday. Talk to you tomorrow at 2:00. Peace.